Daf Tezayin Omud Beis. Let's do the Mishnah again. Towards the top, we got the Mishnah, right? So we're back onto Rabban Gamliel. We're really getting into some other halachas here. Just once we mentioned in the previous mission, which was our subject, how he actually acted differently than he taught. We're going to show a couple of other instances in which he taught one thing, but then he himself went ahead and did something else. So, Rochatz Laila Harishon Shemesa Ishto. He bathed the first night after his wife died. So, Amruloi Talmidim. So the Talmidim said, Limaditanu Rabbeinu, you taught us, our Rebbe, Sha'avel Asuluchas. We're reviewing the Mishnah, Lechvoid you. Sha'avel Asuluchas, that a mourner is not allowed to bathe. Why are you bathing? Omar Lohem, so he answered, Eini Kish Avnei Adam. I'm not like other people. Istanis Ani. I am an Istanis. I am especially fastidious. I would be suffering if I wouldn't bathe. We'll see. There's a little more to this. We'll see in the Gemara. But the main point is, like we discussed, that the purpose of the Gezeirah not to bathe when you're an Avel is not to make a person suffer. The point is to prevent pleasure. Shouldn't be indulging. The point is not to suffer. So therefore, a person who's genuinely suffering through not bathing is allowed to bathe. But again, we'll see a little more on that in the Gemara. Another instance. Ukishames Tavi Avdoi. When his servant Tavi died, Kibel Alov Tanchum. He accepted condolences. Meaning, he acted in a way like a mourner. And he had people be menachem him. So the Talmidim said, Limaditanu Rabbeinu, didn't you teach us Shein Mekablin Tanchumin Ala Avadim, that slaves don't warrant accepting condolences? So Omar Lohem, so he answered, Ein Tavi Avdi Kish'al Kol Avadim. My servant Tavi is not like all other slaves. Kosher Haya, he was an upright man. And this has to be understood. It's a chiddush. We have a chiddush. We're not menachem avel if a person's servant dies. We're menachem avel for relatives. We have a chiddush. He's a servant. He's not his relative. What if you have to be mechadish? We're not menachem avel if the guy around the corner dies. What's the chiddush here? So no, the mafarshim saying, we'll discuss this soon. It's actually not the mafarshim. Yerushalmi says that in those days, when a person had a good servant, he mamish became part of the family. And when he was a personal attendant, he was mamish caring for a person in a very close way. He really became very close with the master. And therefore, it was like a close personal loss. So you might taka think that there would be room to be noyag avelus, to practice avelus. So we're saying that no. But nevertheless, Rabban Gamliel did accept condolences, not because he was my personal servant, but because he actually was a person in his own merit who warranted avelus because of his virtue. Is he Jewish? He was Eved Kanani, which means half Jew, or however you'll put it. He was Eved Kanani. What's that? This was not a chiyuv. Yeah, so the truth is it's a little bit ambiguous. Right. We'll see, we're going to discuss in the Gemara why it might be actually usser to accept condolences for slaves.
Why would this be any different than someone has a favorite horse?
Right, that's right. That's right. That's basically the idea. That's why we don't accept condolences. Because, we'll see soon, part of the idea here is that you have to keep your feelings in perspective. At the end of the day, a slave is not a is not a family member, just like a dog is not a family member. And today, I'm sure it probably has been already, but if not, it will be soon. We'll hear about, you know, reformed people sitting, you know, officially initiating shiva for dogs. They have bar mitzvahs already. So it starts with a bar mitzvah. They do.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. With the talis and everything. Why shouldn't it? Why is it different than other? Yes,
go,
yes.
Go on YouTube.
Oh, yes. Look, why not?
What, they wear tefillin too?
What's that? Talis they wear. I don't know about tefillin.
I don't know about
tefillin. They write the speech.
What's that?
They write the speech.
The dog writes a speech for his kids bar mitzvah. Oh, I have that too. Oh, Rahman al-Itlan. So therefore, what?
I do have that.
That? Rahman al-Itlan. So, if it starts with bar mitzvah, give it a few years later, it'll come to shiva also, right? When do they die? At 18? I don't know when they die. So, what? 18 is old. Right. So therefore, that's really what's being said here is you have to keep your feelings in perspective. Family is family. Not everybody just turns into family. A servant certainly would come before a dog in terms of sitting shiva and accepting condolences. But yet we're saying keep things in perspective. Family is family. A servant doesn't turn into family. Okay. Now, the Gra puts an interesting twist on this. He says, actually, what the Talmidim were asking him was what Yerushalmi itself asks. They weren't asking him, Stam, Ein Mekablin Talchumin, that there's some problem with accepting condolences for a slave. They were asking him, he's not your relative, he's only a slave. Why would you sit shiva for him? And he answered, very interesting. He said, the truth is, it's not necessarily me. Anybody who appreciated who he was, who appreciated his virtues, should actually not mamish practice avelus, but a certain expression of mourning. Like we know that actually the halacha is when a great person dies, anybody who hears about it is supposed to, it can be later, it's next year, anybody who hears about it is supposed to rip their garment. And the truth is that it says, if you're at the death of an adam kasha, if you're at the death of an upstanding Jew, you're supposed to rip your garment.
So
what's that?
About a guy.
We're talking about a not quite a guy, but not quite a Jew. We're talking about a half hat. So Gamliel was saying this person was virtuous enough that he warranted it. So it wasn't, according to the guy, it wasn't necessarily because I'm his master, but because I knew and appreciated his virtues, it's fitting that I should show some sign of mourning.
So you did not, okay, extend this to a guy?
What's that? Probably not. Probably not. Probably not. Okay. And there are precedents to this also. If you remember from Tanakh, when Abner was killed, David actually sat and expressed mourning. Okay. But now we go back to the subject that we had been discussing. We had said that a chassan is exempt from Kriyat Shema on the first night after his wedding. If a chassan chooses to recite Kriya Shema on that first night, koire, he can do so. He says no. Not anybody can just come along and claim distinction. If the Chachamim said that a chassan is exempt, that means that it's hard. It's very difficult to have the proper kavanah when you're a chassan. And therefore, for a person to come along and say, I can, is an expression of arrogance. If you're not really on the level that you can do so, then it's considered an inappropriate display of arrogance. What's that? Who? So that's what we're saying. If it's not a person who's known in general for exceptional piety, he shouldn't think so. What's that? No, we're saying that in and of itself, it's even not with showing it to others, but the very fact that he's doing it is kind of, it's going to be looked upon in Shamayim as arrogant. Okay, so now we go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that Rav Gamliel bathed the first night after his wife died. And he explained, because I'm an Istanis. Now that would not be justification if Avelus was actually Deoraisa. Avelus is Deoraisa, there's no two ways about it. If it's Pikuach Nefesh, you can do it. If it's not Pikuach Nefesh, you can't. So what kind of explanation is this that he was an Istanis? It's fastidious. So my time with Rabban Gamliel. What's Rabban Gamliel's reasoning? So the Gemara says, Kosova, he held Aninus Lailo de Rabbonim, that the mourning, even though the mourning of the first day is the Araisa, we'll explain soon, but the night is not. That's a machloikis elsewhere in Shas. The first day of mourning is the Araisa. Sounds strange, but we'll explain that. First day of mourning is the Araisa. There's a machloikis whether that continues to the night also. So Rabban Gamliel holds that it does not. The first night is already only derabbanan. Diksiv ve'achrisa ki yoyma. The concept of avelus, of the first day being deraisa, is derived from a pasuk that says that when Hashem is chastising the Jewish people, He says, "I'll put you into a state of personal mourning, and your end will be like the bitter day," which implies that mourning is all of one day, and it's just the day, not the night. So therefore, the night time is already only derabbanan. Since it's only derabbanan, the chachamim did not impose their gzeira in the case of a fastidious person. Okay. What's that? If they bury him at night, that's already more questionable. The pashtus, meaning the what seems from the other gemaras, is that it's only deraisa if the death and burial were on the same day. And then it's deraisa for that day, and it's questionable whether it continues on to the night. Now lemaisa, Tosfos says, and I believe that this is the general consensus, although I'm not sure, Tosfos says that this does not mean that the practices of mourning are actually deraisa even on the first day. Aninus is a very specific concept in the deraisa, which is specifically about not eating kajin. That's what it's about. An oinin is not allowed to eat kajin. And even when we talk aninus in terms of derabbanan, it means something else from avelus, right? We know that there are different halachas. When a person's immediate relative dies, there are different halachas that are in play until the burial, and different halachas after the burial. Like for example, until the burial, he doesn't do any mitzvahs, any positive mitzvahs, and no brachas, etc. And there are other halachas also that are different before the burial and after the burial. So, like for example, a few things that don't start before the burial. He doesn't take off his shoes, etc., until after the burial. So that's called aninus. It's one set of halachas. After the dead is buried, it turns into avelus, which is another set of halachas. So what we're talking about here is aninus, which is essentially the first day of after the death. But even that, Tosfos says, really, midaraisa, the whole concept of aninus begins and ends with not eating karbanis. And a kohen not serving the Beis HaMikdash. Any of the expressions of mourning are all derabbanan. The whole concept of mourning as we know it today is only derabbanan. Yet, Rabban Gamliel said that had the deoraisa aninus extended into nighttime, meaning the isetid karbanis and everything, the chachamim would have been machmir on the nighttime as though it was deoraisa, and therefore he would not have been allowed to bathe. But since me deoraisa, the whole concept of aninus, even just via eating kachim, stops at nighttime, and nighttime is already completely rabbanan zone, therefore the Chachamim were more lenient and they allowed a person to bathe if he's fastidious. Well, nice. This also has to be put into perspective. Fastidious doesn't just mean that the guy has an itch, you know, the guy is starting to itch. Fastidious means that this is a person who really, in general, is extreme in his level of fastidiousness. He's known as a person who always has to have things extremely clean, etc., etc. Otherwise a person can't just decide he's a bit uncomfortable and decide to take a shower. Okay. We move on. Okay, Shemes Tavi Avda. Then we said, when a servant Tavi died, is everybody okay or should we turn on the air conditioning? Is it comfortable? Okay. Shemes Tavi Avda. When his servant Tavi died, he accepted condolences. Now, as we explained in the Mishnah, this is generally not done. A person does not practice any mourning for a servant. In the case of Gamliel, it was because of the special virtue of his servant Tavi. So Tana Rabban says in a Braisa, Avadim ushvachos ein oimdim aleihem b'shua. If a servant or a maidservant dies, we don't make a shura for them. Meaning, normally, when there's a person dies, so after the burial, when the relatives are leaving the cemetery, all those present set themselves up in two rows, and the mourners pass through, and everybody is menachem them. That's called shura. So this is kind of what's initiating the mourning. We don't do this for slaves. Vein oimrim aleihem birkas avelim. Also, there's a special bracha of avelim that we say at the first meal of a mourner. I don't know if that's practiced today. It's not practiced today. But then they actually had the first meal outside in the street near the cemetery, and they said the special bracha. V'tanchume avelim, and also condolences. We don't do for slaves or servants, or maid servants. Now, Maisa Umesa Shivchosu Shah Rabbi Eliezer, there was an incident in which the maidservant of Rabbi Eliezer died. Nichnisu Talmidov Lenachamoy. And his students came in to console him. Kivan Shira Oisa. When he saw them, Allah La Aliyah, he went upstairs into the attic and he hoped that they'd get the point. But they didn't, meaning he was trying to avoid them. But they didn't get it. They followed him upstairs. I had a cousin who used to say, "If you don't get it when I tell you explicitly, I'll have to start hinting." So that's basically what Rabbi Eliezer did here. Nichlasan pilay. So he went upstairs to the attic. They all followed him up to the attic. So he turned around and came back downstairs. So they all came back downstairs after him. Nichlasan pilay. He came back downstairs and he went into the foyer, and they all followed him into the foyer. Nichnasu achrav. They followed him into the foyer. He's trying to shake them. They still don't get it. Nichnas litraklin. So then he went from the foyer into the main room. Nichnasu achrav. They followed him in. So he basically told them what we just said. If you don't get it when I tell you, I'll have to start hinting. So amar lohem. So he told them, kemeduma ani sha'atem nichvim bepoishvim. I thought you'd be scalded if I just pour some lukewarm water on you. Meaning I thought you'd get it with a little hint. Now I poured boiling water on you, you still aren't scalded. Oh, you guys don't get it? Haven't I already taught you in the past avodim ushvachos, that when it comes to slaves and maidservants, ein oimdim aleihem b'shura, we do not make a shura for them, ein oimrim aleihem birkas avelim, and we do not recite birkas avelim over them, and we don't accept condolences. So what does one say? A person knows that this person's close personal servant, been serving him for the last 40 years, died. What do you say? Close your ears if you are politically correct. This is what Nehemiah just said. What would you say to a person whose donkey or ox died? What do you say? Hamakim yemale lechol chesrino. May Hashem replace your loss. Kach oimrim loy al avdo val shivchosei. So too we say, for a slave or a maidservant, hamakim yemale lechol chesrino. May Hashem replace your loss. So we have to understand. So it sounds a little bit harsh. It also sounds a little bit callous. What's going on here? So some of the Mefarshim explain this in a very technical way, and this actually has important halachic implications. Some of the Mefarshim explain that you had servants who lived in the person's home, became a part of the community, and when a servant was freed, he just automatically became a part of the Jewish people. That was how it worked. If a person had an Eved Kanani. And it was very important to keep it very clear who is a slave and who's not, because for lineage purposes, you shouldn't be marrying with slaves, etc. And slaves often would try to take advantage of different situations that would happen. Let's say an owner died, or different situations where they kind of fall between the cracks and no one knows that they're slaves anymore, and they kind of merge into the Jewish community. And this had to be countered. They had to make sure to keep track very well, to keep track who's slaves and who aren't. So therefore, they said, don't practice any form of mourning over them, because that might give the impression to people who don't know you as well that actually these people are really your relatives. That could cause all kinds of lineage problems in two directions. A, it could cause people to start thinking that these slaves are Jewish and that their kids are Jewish, etc. Or a different problem, which might be worse, let's say someone knows it was a slave and sees you sitting and accepting condolences, will say, aha, that's his kid. No shidduchim with that guy. So therefore, it was important to keep it very clear who's a slave and who's a regular member of the community. And therefore, this is how many of the Mefarshim explained it. We make a point of not keeping the line very clear. These are slaves, these are not members of the Jewish community. Whoever it is that's accepting condolences. If someone's going to sit down and accept condolences after the slave dies, they might say, oh, apparently it's his relative. And that means that this person himself is a slave. He might find himself next month having problems with shidduchim. He won't know why. So therefore, we make efforts to keep it very, very clear. Clearly demarcate the difference between slaves and the Jewish community.
That's when the slave dies before the master. But if the slave outlives the master, then how do we know?
Well, slaves were then inherited by the children. Usually when an old slave died, he might have a younger master, right? Which is all the more relevant that people might end up thinking that he's his kid. Okay, but other Lamaisa the Meiri says that no, this is to be understood in its literal sense. It's simply, we're making a point of showing that you have to keep things in perspective. You have to keep things in perspective. Family is family and slaves are slaves. And when people become a little bit too emotionally correct, too compassionate, you start mixing up values. We don't want values getting mixed up. Remember, family is family and slaves are slaves.
Seems a bit extreme to compare Chayim and Zadur.
What's that?
To compare Chayim and
Zadur. We're doing it just in the sense.
To make the point.
To make the point, and also it's in the sense that this is property, this is not family. It's a more chash of a form of property. In fact, look at the way the Rambam describes how a person has to treat his Eved Kanani. You have to be very, very humane and nice to them. Eved Ivri is mamish complicated. A person buys an Eved Ivri, he's getting himself into trouble. It's not kedai to buy an Eved Ivri. Because the mamish have to treat him like royalty. A person buys an Eved Kanani, you can have him do hard work, but you have to treat him very, very humane. You have to be very, very menschlich. We had these ideas way before the Goyim did. Okay. Tani Idach, we have another braisa that says, Avodim ushvachois ein maspidin oisa. Slaves and maidservants should not be eulogized. Rabbi Yossi says, in Eved Kashahu, if he was an upright slave, see, generally, in most cases, slaves were not upright people. They were people who were bought from other nations, and they were usually the lowlifes of the other nations. The slaves generally were not upright people, and therefore it says the more slaves a person has in his house, the more marbe avodim marbe gezel. There's going to be a lot of theft, thievery going on and stuff like that. So therefore, an upright slave was an unusual phenomenon. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, if the slave was actually upright, armim alav, you could eulogize and you say, hoy ish toy v'nemon, woe for the loss of a good and faithful man, v'nana mi'egiyad, who enjoyed the fruit of his labors. Amru Lai, they said, whoa, im kein mahinachto l'ksherim, if you're going to say all this for a slave, what are you leaving for decent Jews? And these are all big praises. Toiv v'naman v'nana mi'egiyad, a person who's good and faithful and enjoys the fruits of his labors. To remember that in those days it was before title inflation. Today titles are cheap. Everybody is who knows what. But in those days, every word was measured. So Reb Chaim Moshe Grudzinski, one time he got a letter, and they wrote on the letter, Lichvoid, there was like two lines of titles. You know, Rabban Shulchan Bnei Agoyla, Agoyin Agoyla, you know, etc., etc., etc. So you had many Gedolim who would turn back. Before they would even read it, they would turn back the top lines. So it's not to read the titles, just to read the letter. But Chaim Moshe used to read it and laugh. And he would crack up and he would say, you know what this reminds me of? In Germany, I think in many countries at that time, bread costed like 10 million marks. Why? Because the economy was down. They printed more paper and that caused unbelievable inflation. And bread costed 10 million marks and everybody had 10 million marks. It wasn't like, you know, people were running around, things cost in the billions. So he said, it used to be that a mark was a chashuv of a thing. And then as they started producing more and more of them, yeah, bread can cost 10 million marks. So he said, you used to be, say, harav, wow, that's already very impressive. But then, it was tidal inflation. And everything became cheap. And you know, as I heard someone say, today sometimes they use the term rabbi just to differentiate between male and female. Well, that also depends if you're in reform circles or not in reform circles. Yeah. Okay. What's that? Yeah, right. Okay. So therefore, yeah, Adrabah was saying in the Gemara that they were careful about their praises. Praises were also measured, and therefore they were worth more. Okay. Now we move on. Having said that we're careful about our praises, Tanu Rabban says in Braisa, Enkoirin Ovois Elo Lishloisha. Only three people are referred to as Avos, as the fathers of our nation. I guess you can guess which three. Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. Not Adam and Noach, not Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody else. Ve'enkoreni mois elo le'arba. Only four women are called the mothers. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. No, we didn't even include Bila and Zilpah. Okay, let's see. So the Gemara says, Avos my time. Why is it that we limit the title of Avos, the fathers of the nation, to these people? Why not the Shvatim? Why wouldn't we say Yehuda Avinu? So Ileme, if you'll say that it's because Mishum Deloyad Inon Imer Uven Kasinon Imishimon Kasinon, it's because we don't know whether we come from Reuven or Shimon, so therefore it's not appropriate to say Reuven Avinu. Who said he's your father? You can call him Uncle Reuven. So Ihachi, if that's the reason, Imo Isnami. The same should go for the mothers. How can you say Rachel Imenu and Leah Imenu? Leah Dinon Imi Rachel Kasinon Imi Leah Kasinon. We don't know if we come from Rachel or Leah. You certainly don't come from both. So you shouldn't say that either. Huh? So why don't we say the same thing for the Shvatim? That's what the Gemara is saying. Inasmuch as we don't mean it on the personal level, we do mean in a general way, these are the people who fathered the Jewish nation in a general way, we can say for the Shvatim as well. So the Gemara answers, no, it's not an issue of accuracy. We do say Rachel Imenu. Ela ad hachachshivi tfeilachshivi. Rather, it's distinction. These people deserve the distinction. Everybody else is already does not warrant that special distinction. Now this is That's right. A very important A very important principle in Torah in general is understanding not just the Torah doesn't just differentiate between for right and wrong, but part of Torah is more important and less important. That's also a part of integrating Torah's values. More important and less important. It's also important to know in the Torah what's something that's important and what's something that is might not be anything wrong, but it's not important. Don't make something important out of it. Or you can have two important things, but one is more important than the other. All these things have to be clear, because when these things start getting confused, things can become very distorted. So here, what's the point? What are we saying? There are four, these seven people are referred to as the fathers and mothers of our nation, nobody else. The first, the most, you know, well, the Ben Ish Chai says, what about Adam and Noach? He also says, what about Moshe Rabbeinu? But probably a more obvious question is, what about Bila and Zilpah? Because Imam is right up there with Rachel and Leah. So you have to understand that when we're saying the mothers and fathers of the nation, we're not just talking biological. Biological, we have a lot of very interesting fathers. We got old Grandpa Terach, and we have Lavan, and Be'ezus Hashem Mashiach will come from all kinds of interesting characters as well. Mashiach is going to come from Menashe, right? King Menashe, and he's going to come from Eglon, the king of Moav. So, we're not talking biological here. We're talking about the people who fathered the Jewish nation in essence. And there are two aspects to what we mean here. First of all, these are the people who shaped not just the bodies of the Jewish nation, but the nature of the Jewish nation. These three people developed the ideals that constitute the ideals of the Jewish nation ever since. And these four women constituted the ideals that constitute the ideals of Jewish femininity ever since. But it's also more than that. It's also more than that. These people, so what was the difference between Rachel and Leah and Bilhah and Zilpah? Bilhah and Zilpah were biological mothers. But Rachel and Leah, this is what all of these seven people had in common. Their sole focus in life, everything they were striving for in life, that's how the Rambam puts it, we see. What's the big thing that we see focused on, what they all wanted so badly was children, children, children. That's most stressed, right? What were the Avos and Imoyos' dream? It doesn't take much perusal of Tanakh to see that their foremost dream, ambition, obsession in life was children. Right? You see that Avraham, that was what he was pining for, Yitzchak, and then we see Yaakov went easily. But you see it was mamish a race between the Imoyos, that each one was trying to get in as much as possible. So the Rambam says their foremost ambition was Lahamid Uma Ovdei Hashem. They wanted to perpetuate the ideals that they had been living, to turn it into something eternal, something permanent. It shouldn't die with them. This was their foremost vision in life. Avraham Avinu had achieved very great things. He had achieved more than people, anybody before him had achieved. He didn't want it to die with him. He wanted this to be something perpetual. And that was their whole focus in life. And therefore, yeah, Bilhah and Zilpah, they were bought in. But on the contrary, Bilhah and Zilpah being bought in is part of what highlights Rachel and Leah's ideals. And therefore, these are the ones who are the epitome of fathers and mothers of Klal Yisrael, the people who turned it into the supreme value of life. Lahamid Umoy Vedes Hashem, like the Rambam says. To raise, to cultivate a nation, to perpetuate the standards that they themselves had initiated. So that's why, yes, these are our fathers and mothers. And yes, Rachel is our mother even if we come from Leah, and Leah is our mother even if we come from Rachel. Ben Yishchai adds that if you add up all the letters, it comes out to 26. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah equals 26. That's the Shem Avaya, the name of Hashem. These were the people who actually implemented Hashem in this world, and that's what continues ever since from them. You count the letters. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, you count the letters, it's 26. I counted them, but you can do it too. Okay. What's that? Oh, you went through the chesed. Oh, okay. What? So the truth is, the Ben Yishchai is still not so happy. What's with Moshe Rabbeinu? He shows sources that Moshe Rabbeinu was actually greater than the others. I don't know exactly how these things work. If it means in certain respects or in all respects, that he shows a lot of sources that Moshe Rabbeinu was actually greater than the others. So he says something interesting here. He says Rabbeinu is a greater title than Avinu. Avraham Avinu is Avraham Avinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is even greater than Avinu. Rabbeinu includes Avinu. That's a very interesting twist that the Ben Yishchai has here. He says we know from the Gemara of Metzia, right? Avedas Oyev, Avedas Rabbi Kedemis. You have a father and the Rebbe comes first, because the Rebbe is considered to have done more for. So Moshe Rabbeinu, even in the sense that we're talking about, of laying down the structure of Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu achieved more, and therefore he has a title that supersedes theirs. Rabbeinu, it's even bigger. Okay, maybe. Yeah, but then you're going to run into a problem with Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah.
They possess the three and the four, and you must possess both aspects.
If you put Rachel and Leah together, because Rachel and Leah didn't each mother all of Klal Yisrael, each mother different parts. So are we going to differentiate? Moshe also fathered a nice fraction of Klal Yisrael. It's already not the whole thing. So that's why the Gemara brings out that we're obviously not going by the people who actually fathered the whole nation. These are the people who laid down the foundation of Kal Yisrael. Okay. We move on. We move on. By the way, what does this mean? Does it mean that al-pi halacha you're not allowed to call somebody Ovinu? What about Pirkei Ovis? The Mepharshim asks. What about Pirkei Ovis? Well, Ovis, how can you call it? Saying all the Tanoim are Ovis. That's why it's called Pirkei Ovis. What's that? Well, that's something else. It's Beit Avot, each one's father. You're allowed to call your father your father. But we find people who we call the fathers of Klal Yisrael, right? Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel were called the fathers of Klal Yisrael. So some of Farshim say that really, all this means is that in Tefillat Hashem, when you're invoking the merits of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, you say Avinu about them. But you do not say it. But you don't say it about other people. What time should we still turn on the air conditioning? What time is it? What? Yeah. What's that? 9 o'clock. Nope, by the time. I'll see if I can get it on in a minute, I'll do it. And we'll save it the next time. Okay, so again, as we started saying, some of Poshim explained that the point here is just when you're davening, it isn't appropriate to refer to anybody else as avos. But some in conversation, you can refer to other people as avos. That's one take. What's that? Yeah. You say bizchus Avram Avinu, but when you're mentioning other people, don't say Avinu. Klapei Shamayim, these are the ones who have the title of Avinu, other people don't. So when you're talking to Hashem, don't call other people Avinu. When I talk to other people, when you're talking among people, you can call them Avinu. But when you talk to Hashem, it's tam, an important point, that you have to be careful when you're davening to express yourself appropriately in this sense also. That's why, for example, when you're davening, you're making a shebeach for somebody. Let's say you're making a shebeach for an Adam Gadol, not to say harav, and certainly not to say Hagoyin. People make that mistake of making Mishabeach for a very great person who was sick, and they said Mishabeach, Huyavorech is Harav Hagoyin. I jumped. It's considered very not good thing to do that. No titles when you're making a Mishabeach. It's the name and that's all. Don't explain to Hashem who's great and who isn't great. It's the name and that's all. So that's how some explain this also. When you're talking to Hashem, there are 7 people who are Avinu. You're talking to other people, say what you want. When you're talking to Hashem, 7 people are Avinu, nobody else. What's that? Oh, Hashem is Avinu, yeah, he qualifies.
No, but now we're creating the
Avon. No. When we say that somebody is Rachum, we use adjectives about Hashem that we might use about other people too. Okay.
What's the thing about it?
Yes.
Now that the master is supposed to be the person.
Yes and no. Not titles. Okay.
It's interesting because in one of the shuls, right now, when they were making a mishabera for the Rav, they didn't say Rav.
You don't say Rav, yeah. That's generally.
I didn't know whether they were trying to hide the name so that people didn't know that he was thinking of. To make a shabera for him, and they were trying to keep it under wrap, or
Generally, we don't use titles when we're making a shabera. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll begin the next gemara.
So even if you are doing it privately in the Shemona Esrei,
I'm not sure. Okay, Omar Rabbi Elazar. My diksiv, what's meant by the pasuk that says, "Kein avorechecha b'chayai, b'shimcho eso kapai." Yes, I bless you in my life, and in your name I raise up my hands. What is this referring to? What does it mean to bless Hashem, and what does it mean to raise up your hands in His name? So came. Oh no, I skipped a couple of lines. Quite so. Let's back up. Tanya Idach. Right. Back up two lines. Tanya Idach. Another brisa says, Avodim ushvachos ein kerinoison abba ploini v'ima ploinis. In earlier times, it used to be a coven, a respectful way to refer to all the people. You call them abba so and so. Or ima so and so. That's how you see. Also in Eretz Yisrael today, they'll sometimes refer to older people as saba or savta, even if it's not really your. So you say abba so and so or ima so and so. But again, back to our slaves, you don't relate to slaves in this way. V'shel Rabbi Gamliel, hayukarim loisam abba ploini v'ima ploinis. And the household of Rabbi Gamliel, they did refer to the slaves as abba so and so and ima so and so. So the Gemara says, Maisa Listar, are we citing an incident to contradict the ruling we just said? So the Gemara says, Mishum Dachshivi, not because they were distinguished. So what does this mean? Here also we have the same discussion that we had earlier. Some say that this is simply saying, it's not in place to show them this respect, except for the house, the servants of Ram Gamliel, that they were Takachoshim. But others say that no, it goes back to the same issue we were discussing before about making sure to keep things clear for lineage purposes. If you're going to call somebody Abba so-and-so, people might come and say, oh wow, he really is that guy's father. And therefore, again, we'll run into the same two problems that we had earlier. They might start considering the slave a kosher Jew, or they might start considering this guy, with all of his good intents to be respectful, they might start considering him a slave. And therefore we say they're among Amliel's slaves, it was okay to call them Abba Ploini and Ima Ploinis, because they were so well known as slaves that you wouldn't have to worry that by calling them Abba so and so, people would come to think that they're kosher. So therefore again, it's the two possible approaches. Either we're simply saying it's not fitting to give them that title, or we're saying it's a technical issue of we don't want to run into lineage problems. Okay, all right, we'll stop here. Be'ezras Hashem, Tuesday, Thursday we will be downstairs. Again, it's going to be Sundays and Tuesdays up here, Thursdays downstairs. Next Sunday, we're starting new times. Myriv is going to move to 8:15. Myriv is going to be 8:15. So this